Oppenheimer.
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
Listen, Nerd Right Radio!
Nerd Alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 22 of Nerd Pride Radio. 22, the number of millions of people who watched the season 11 premiere of American Idol this week. Not me, though. So, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I'm a D&D nerd, a sci-fi nerd, comic book nerd, a computer nerd, movie nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, and there's about seven other kinds of nerd that I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You're listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my brain anymore. My co-host this week is Daz. Welcome, Daz. But first off, speaking of Daz, a little feedback. All right, this week's feedback comes from Daz. Daz sent me an email entitled Feedback and Podomatic Questions. So, from Daz says, Mike, still loving the cast. Thank you, Daz. And have at last joined the forum. I noticed that. Good to have you on board. I'm telling you, you want to talk to me, the forum is the best way. This, in fact, was not even an email. This was a private message on the forum, just like I tell you guys. All right, so now Daz's feedback. Says, loved your chat about getting the youngins involved in D&D. Oh, I mean Pathfinder. In my own case, I've been running a campaign for my wife and girls for a year or more. Now, D&D with ladies is an entirely different affair, let me assure you. And then he goes on with several very vivid examples. But let me tell you, I am right on board with this, Daz. I was just talking to my son the other day, Gygax, and I was talking about gaming with his friends because I mentioned a couple episodes ago that he does a lot of one-on-one gaming through texting as well as some gaming online and other stuff. And when he runs as a game master, I asked him how it was different because a lot of the times he's gaming with girls, a lot of times he's gaming with guys. And I said, you know, what's the difference? Because I don't have as much experience gaming with females in my group. And he says, you know, they game like girls. And I asked for a little explanation. It was like, and he said, you know, it's not in a bad way, but in his experience, and he's only 17, but in his experience, guys and girls are looking for different things out of a game. For him, you know, he says, guys are looking to kick ass. Guys are looking to be total badasses. They want to do something cool. They want to be impressive. They want to have a story to tell their friends afterwards about how awesome that game was. Whereas girls, well, yeah, they want that too, but more than that, they want to know how everyone's feeling. They want to put their emotions into the game. To them, the interplay of people and emotions and situations is far more interesting as a gaming item than it is for guys. And I found that fascinating. And in my limited experience, I see a little bit of that. But and he says it's not everybody. It's not every girl or every guy that does this. But in general, he says, yeah, you know, you can kind of count on that. So I found that just fascinating. But I've gotten away from Daz's feedback. Daz then goes on to say, I'm a first edition D&D nerd, so I use a combination of swords and wizardry, based on the original D&D, for free, basic fantasy, based on first and third edition, free, and the awesome castles and crusades. Sadly, I am familiar with absolutely none of these. I played Advanced Dungeons & Dragons way back in the day. I am familiar with some of the OD&D style games that have come out. I mean, as in just the concepts of them, but I've never actually looked at them. I've never actually played it with them. So, Daz here has provided several links, to find all this stuff. I will try and put those into the show notes or into the thread on the forums. And if anyone wants to check those out, you can because one of the strengths of Dungeons & Dragons 3rd edition, 3.5, was the OGL, in my opinion. The Open Gaming License let people put together their own games, and so therefore it was the OGL that allowed people to start creating old versions of D&D, recreating them from scratch, and giving us games that had that same feel with a lot of the same rules, although not necessarily all of them, and I find that stuff really fascinating. Again, I haven't looked at it as much as I would like, because, you know, when I've got gaming time, I'm playing my Pathfinder game with my kids. But interesting stuff, and I'll try and put those links up. He also mentions he's an old RuneQuest fan, so elements of that make it in. Now on to the music portion of Daz's message. Daz says, being massive anime fans, my kids watch the new K-On! Anime. I have no idea what that is. It's about a high school rock band. Oh, thank you. And he goes on, and found this band from the credits. Check these gals out. They are called Scandal, and it's a Japanese anime girl rock band that reminds me of late 70s Kiss and modern Green Day, with Japanese chicks, of course. And, of course, you can't understand the lyrics, but they are awesome, says Daz. He says his own kids are now starting a band called Ninja Hairdryer, who only sing in their version of Japanese. All right. I went ahead and followed your links, and again, I'll try and provide these links as well. If I forget, someone remind me. This is fascinating. It's, to me, you know, it's rock. It's Japanese rock, and I don't understand the lyrics. But the most interesting thing about it is I have no idea who these people are. I have no idea how big they are in Japan. But watch the crowd. Oh, my God, these people are having a great time. When I'm seeing an entire crowd of thousands of people all with their glow sticks in the air, and they're all jumping at the same time, holy crap. They look like they're having a rocking time at that concert. And, you know, and the music's not bad. It just, you know, no great shakes for me. But again, I don't speak Japanese and I'm not really used to the style. So check out the videos though. I'll try and put up links for those. And then he goes on to give me some Podomatic questions, but you guys don't get to see those yet. Maybe we'll roll some up today. So Daz finishes up by saying, thank you. Keep up the damn podcast, sir. It is your destiny. Well, I certainly hope so, man. I'm having a great time. I'm so glad you joined the forums. I'm so glad you wrote in. Thank you, Daz. But now on to the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. This is the time for me where I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. During the week, if anything strikes me as interesting, I add it to my master list, and the best stuff gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. So, straight into the master list. First off, Pegacorns Revealed! Who knew I'd have to get back to this segment? I really thought that was just a one-off thing. But turns out, I have received a letter in the mail. Actual mail. It's a little scary. And it is, strangely, from the law firm of Barbaro, Omaha, and Manowar, PLLC. And the heading on it is Cease and Desist. I'm a little concerned already. This is my first cease and desist order. While I am scared, I'm also a little excited. I've always wanted one. So this says, Dear Mr. Jones, this law firm represents Mr. Rossist B. Pegacorn. If you are represented by legal counsel, please direct this letter to your attorney immediately and have your attorney notify us of such representation. You are hereby directed to cease and desist all defamation of Mr. Rossist B. Pegacorn's character and reputation. Mr. Rossist B. Pegacorn is an educated, respected professional in the community. He has spent years serving the community in his profession and building a positive reputation. Mr. Rossist B. Pegacorn has learned that you have engaged in spreading false, destructive, and defamatory rumors about him. Under the laws of both Nebraska and Minnesota, the state of Mr. Rossist B. Pegacorn's residence, it is unlawful to engage in defamation of another's character and reputation. Defamation consists of... All right, blah, blah, blah gives me a bunch of definitions of defamation. I don't care. Your defamatory statements involve disparaging and injuring Mr. Rossus B. Pegacorn's reputation on radio and or podcast recording. Accordingly, we demand that you immediately cease and desist your unlawful defamation and provide us with prompt written assurance within 10 days that you will cease and desist from further defamation of Mr. Rossus B. Pegacorn's character and reputation. In the event that you fail to meet this demand, please be advised that Mr. Rossus Pegacorn has asked us to communicate to you that he'll pursue all available legal remedies, including seeking monetary damages, and injunctive relief, and an order that you pay court costs and attorney fees. If I have any questions, please contact me directly, and it's signed by his lawyer, Mr. Edward Secretariat, dictated but not read. Holy crap! This sounds serious, doesn't it? All right. First off, Mr. Rossist B. Pegacorn, I thought that was your online handle. I had no idea it was your real name. That is hysterical. I appreciate that. Secondly, dude, what did I say about you? Huh? What did I say about you? Nothing. Nothing. I talked about Pegacorns in general. Me being racist against Pegacorns has absolutely no bearing whatsoever on you. Good Lord. I didn't even know you were a real Pegacorn. I just thought it was your last name, right? See? So, really, if I've offended you, you know, it's probably kind of what you deserve. I mean, after all, you did come at me with kind of an attitude. I feel like you started it. So, But I appreciate the effort that went into this. I cannot believe you actually spent money on lawyers. But I am just so impressed by this letter. This is so professional. Thank you. And then at the bottom, there's a defamation settlement agreement where I can sign off and date it and then mail it back to them that I will agree to cease and desist. So you guys should hold your breath waiting for that. That is awesome. Seriously, I wish I could spend more time talking about it, but we have to get to my gaming table.
I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die.
Role-playing games, video games, card games, if it fits on my gaming table, then I am going to share it with you. A couple things. First, did you know they're going to sell Munchkin in Target stores now? Ooh, not that I need any more Munchkin stuff, not that I'm likely to buy any more Munchkin stuff, because I have a lot of it. But how cool that they're getting a wider market. I'm very impressed by that. More important than Munchkin, though, we're playing Hero Battle. Holy crap, you guys have got to get in on this. I don't know if you've played Hero Battle. I stole the idea from some other forum, and that forum apparently stole it from someone before them. The game's been around for a long time, often referred to as Hit, Hit, Heal, is I think how I've seen it played. We call it Hero Battle, and we've kind of customized the rules because that's what we do. But the idea is simple. Everyone gets in by nominating a character. For this particular battle, we're having a Disney character battle, so everyone has to get in by nominating a Disney character to throw into the mix. And then, after I've got them all piled up, I'm the moderator. I randomize them, and then I secretly assign one character to each person. Nobody knows who anyone else is. Everyone starts off with 8 hit points, and then every day, all you do is come in, you spend 5 minutes to look over the field, and you choose 2 people to hit, 1 person to heal. Every hit takes off a hit point, every heal puts 1 back. So slowly, everyone's points get whittled down until when you hit 0, you're dead, and you're out of the game. Last person left standing wins. And then there's a bunch of twists and turns as you try and guess people's secret identities. And if you can guess, there's bonus points involved. And there's other things that go along with it. But really, that's the gist of it. And it's really simple and yet really fun. Because what happens is that everything is deterministic in this game. I mean, everything is determined by the hits and heals that the players lay down. So everything is player controlled. But it feels random. It feels... because you get this mob mentality, and so suddenly you'll see everybody kind of gangs up in a certain direction, and you get these trends that go back and forth. And the magic of this game is you have very little control. You have just if you're starting off with 10 players, you only have 1/10 of the control on the board, and it's really hard. And then you'll see things like the game when we played a celebrity battle. Tom Cruise was in. Tom Cruise died. First round. I mean, of all the possible hated people that could have been in this thing, we had Tom Cruise, and man, everybody took him down first round. It's that kind of thing. And so it is fun to play. It's a little maddening at times, and yet everyone has a good time. So if anyone is interested in playing Hero Battle, the sign-up is going to be running through this weekend. I probably won't start the game until Tuesday or Wednesday. So if you want in, honestly, come join us. It's really that simple. Sign up for the boards. Sign up for Hero Battle, just give me the name of a Disney character, and boom, I'll get you in. It's that simple. And now it's time for a Nerd Culture Report.
I thought this was bowling for weirdos.
No, Gonzo, but you're very, very close. Okay, today's Nerd Culture Report has to do with voice actors. This actually could have gone into updates, I suppose, but we'll stick it in Nerd Culture Report. Last week I talked about my favorite voice actors, and this week... just as it's on my mind, I keep running across little tidbits and facts that I just find fascinating. Okay, this is not necessarily related to the voice actors, but cartoon related. What is Marge Simpson's maiden name? That's right, it's Bouvier. We all knew that, right? Okay, and I always thought it was from Jacqueline Kennedy's maiden name, Jacqueline Bouvier. All right, that's what everyone assumed. It turns out, though, that did you know that there is a dog... a French dog, the Bouvier. Bouvier is French for cattle dog, I believe. Bouvier beef. Yeah, that sounds about right. Anyway, French for cattle dog or cattle herder. And Matt Groening supposedly owned one of these dogs at one time. To lend credence to this theory, did you know the full name of the Bouvier breed of dogs is actually Bouvier de Flanders? Ah, I was amazed. I just thought that was fascinating. So, thank you to Yancey for that little tidbit. On top of that, though, I also just ran across this week, Paul Winchell. Paul Winchell, was the original voice of Tigger from the Winnie the Pooh cartoons. He's the voice of Dick Dastardly. If you remember Dick Dastardly, you're impressed already. Fleagle from the Banana Splits. Mr. Freakin' Owl from the Tootsie Pop commercials. Okay, this is Paul Winchell. Gargamel. This is Paul Winchell. Okay. Paul Winchell, in addition to being a talented voice actor, a ventriloquist for many years, he also apparently had medical training. And did you know that later on in his life, he invented the prototype, the first working model, patented, the first working model of an artificial heart? Seriously? Oh my God, that was the coolest thing. And while his version of the artificial heart was never actually installed in any patient, transplanted into, I guess you don't install it, maybe you do. Anyway, it is considered the prototype for the working models that did follow after it. I mean, that people actually took his example and used it to create the first models that were implanted into real live patients. So, holy crap, Gargamel invented the artificial heart. Just with magic, apparently. Wait a minute. What's that new music? Okay, I don't actually know what that new music is because I couldn't figure out what I wanted before I actually started recording, so I'm leaving that blank. But I'm going to guess that what you just heard now was something book-related or reading-related, because this is going to be my new book segment. I don't even have a name for that yet either, but let's call it Mike's Book Review. Or Mike's Nerd Book Review, the Nerd's Book Review, something like that. Okay, this is going to be another new segment, because right now I'm reading The Hunger Games, and I love this book. Well, this series of books. My wife got it for Christmas, and she got it on the Kindle as the whole trilogy comes as a single unit. And so she finished it up. She absolutely loved The Hunger Games, and so therefore she recommended it to me, and I am halfway through book two, and I cannot get enough of this book. I will be done with it before the next broadcast because it is that flippin' good. Holy cow. If you haven't read The Hunger Games, read The Hunger Games. You'll thank me for it. It's really good. Now, I understand that there's some people who have criticized it. They say it's probably a direct copy of Battle Royale. They feel that she is plagiarized. They feel that blah, 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 blah. I'm not familiar with Battle Royale. I can't speak to that at all. I'm going to assume that, look, you know, when you come up with the idea of putting a bunch of people in an arena to battle to the death for the entertainment of your fans, there's going to be some similarities. But I haven't read Battle Royale. I can't speak to it. I'm not going to defend or deny or anything like that. I'm just going to tell you I like Hunger Games. This is a good stinking book, and is a book that is, this actually goes back to the difference between boys and girls, men and women in their gaming styles, when I talked about the stereotypical traits, because this is a book that is high action. There is a lot that goes on in this thing. There's a lot of violent action, obviously, based on that premise, and it's some good sci-fi material, good action, good pace. Everything just keeps going. And yet at the same time, it's not about that. I mean, it is about that because that's what's going on nonstop. And yet underneath that, it's really about what goes on in the main character's head. Katniss is her name. It's about what goes on in Katniss's head through all of this. How does she feel about it? How does she react to it? What does she care about? What does she want? And she is strong. She is tough. She is a powerful female lead, and she's amazing. I mean, you have to be in love with her as you read this book. It's just part of it. It's just really, really engaging, and I cannot get enough. I am totally into this thing. I've already chosen sides, and I have my dreams for how this thing is going to turn out, and I know that every time something comes up that indicates that maybe I'm wrong in my guesses on how it's going to turn out, I can feel myself starting to, oh, really? But it has to be. You can't do it. And I don't want to give anything away, so I know I'm being intentionally vague. I'm sorry about that. I don't want to give anything away. But I am completely hooked into this thing. I mean, it has really latched onto me in a way that, man, you know, I can tell if it doesn't turn out the way I'm hoping, you know, if this particular character dies or fades out or if it doesn't work out the way I want it to, I think I'm going to be really depressed. I'm that invested in this set of characters. But the other thing about this series of books that just floors me and awes me at the same time is it is written at a fifth grade level, right? This is a kid's book. It's a book for teens and tweens, really, with extremely mature themes and emotions. Okay, it's not sexual. At least I'm halfway through book two, and it's not of a sexual nature, but there is relationship issues and lots of emotional issues and really complex stuff. And for the most part, it doesn't shy away from any of that complexity, which is really impressive. And yet, it's written on a fifth grade level. I went to go see because we had left my copy at home on the Kindle. And I was at school with my wife, and she said, well, let's head over to the library and see if they've got a copy of it here. You can just read for a little bit here while you're waiting. And we went over, and so she looked it up, and she says, oh, yeah, okay, it's a 5.3. It'll be in the fifth grade section. Let's go look over here. 5.3. So, you know, fifth grade, third month. And that's all it is. That's as complex as this thing is, and yet I wouldn't even think about that as I'm reading it. It is just it has me totally engrossed. And so the lesson I'm learning is – I am very wordy, if you haven't noticed. All right, I am very flowery in my phrasing. I write short stories and other stuff, and I tend to go on. I don't have run-on sentences, but you'd think that they were by looking at them, because I can write a sentence that is easily, you know, anyone else's two paragraphs, and I've got it all in clauses and commas and extended phrasings and all this stuff. And I will never use a cheap word when a $12 word will do. All right. I just do that. That's the level of vocabulary I instinctively put into my stuff. And not to be pretentious, it's just that's the word that best captures what I'm trying to say. And so that's what I do. And the novel I'm trying to write right now is a kid's novel. I want to write something for a younger audience because I have a great story in my head and I'm in love with this idea and I really want to get this on paper. And I'm having a tough time with it because I always write it and I think I'm doing really well. And they'll go back and reread the last chapter or two and realize that I have just written something that is way over the heads of any, you know, junior high kid that's going to read it. And it needs to be on that junior high level. So I'm trying to take lessons from the Hunger Games. I'm trying to follow this and realize that, you know what? You don't have to write, $12 words. You don't have to be, overly complex about your phrasings. You don't have to. You can use simple words, simple phrasing, and still be incredibly evocative. Incredible, you know, paint these incredible images. Because I'm telling you, from the first chapter, it took me all of three pages to be completely hooked into this book. The images are so vivid. I had no problem. I had the entire village, the entire scenario, the history, all of it within the first chapter. All of it laid out in my head, and the picture was there for me. The author does a spectacular job. So I'm trying to take lessons from that. Have I rambled on too much? Maybe. But I'm trying to take lessons from this because I would like to get some of that into my own writing. I would love to have even half of this ability to create a scene and put it on paper and make it accessible to people who aren't in my head already. You know what I mean? So I cannot say enough for Hunger Games. I don't care if it's making me seem like a simpleton, that I'm latching onto the book of the week and I'm caught up in this whole hype around it or whatever. I didn't know anything about it going into it. All I know is I've heard people talking about it and my wife said it was really good, so I read it. I thought The Hunger Games, I thought it was something about vampires. I was completely wrong, and happily so. I didn't even tell you the best part. You know what the best part is? The movie is coming out on my birthday. It's being released. My birthday is on a Friday this year, and the movie is being released on my flippin' birthday. So guess what I'm doing for my birthday? Yeah, that's right. Me and my wife are going to go see Hunger Games. And I don't care if it's substandard. I don't care if it's a crap movie. It doesn't make any difference. I love the book, and I love my wife, and I love any movie I can see in the theater with my wife automatically gains a star and a half just because the two of us are together. I am going to have a great time watching this thing. And for the lead character, for Katniss, they're getting the same gal, Jennifer Lawrence, who played the young Mystique in the X-Men prequel movie. So, wow. And she was really good in that. I mean, not just that she's a hot actress and all this, but she was also very talented and very effective in the role of Mystique. I'm hoping that she can bring that same emotional range to Katniss and make this movie live for me. So I am looking forward to it. Anyway, that is enough of the new book review. Let's move on to something completely different.
And now for something completely different.
Thank you, Mr. Cleese. That's right. This is just some stuff that I don't have a category for. It doesn't fit into any of my other segments yet, so we'll stick it here. What do I have? All right. This is kind of cheap of me. I was listening to the WTF podcast with Mark Maron, which I love, as I've mentioned, and he is interviewing Russell Peters. And do you know Russell Peters at all? I'm a comic, stand-up comic nerd. I love comedy, and I love stand-up comics. I'm just fascinated by them. And Russell Peters is a guy who I've known of for several years now, and I really, really like him. But he is a dude from Canada. He is Canadian. Both of his parents are from India. So he is second generation in Canada. And Russell Peters is a brown dude, but with a Canadian accent and a completely English name, Russell Peters. But he is of Indian culture. And so he has this act, this stand-up act, that focuses on racial issues and racial topics and jokes. Not racist, but racial, and as he emphasizes. And so he can talk about he's very, very observant, and he's a great mimic. He's got a great head for voices. And so, he can talk about Chinese culture or Filipino culture or Thai culture, African culture. He can talk about, Pakistanis living in America. And he hits this nerve with them. He can touch on these common elements of their experience and really capture what they see in themselves and what they think other people see in themselves as they make lives in other parts of the world. I don't know if that makes any sense, but you got to listen to Russell Peters. He's fascinating. I love listening to his act. I've always liked him. What I didn't know about Russell Peters, and I just found out as he's on Mark Maron, is that Russell Peters is the biggest comic in the world. Yeah, let that soak in. Have you ever heard of Russell Peters before? Because if you haven't, he is the most popular, biggest selling comedian in the world right now. He sells more tickets than anybody around the world outside of America. He can pack stadiums by himself because he's that big. And even in the States now, he's getting to the point where he's that big. Russell Peters is amazing. You'll be hearing more of him. Trust me, because he's that big. All right. So have I emphasized that enough? All right. So Russell Peters is telling a story, and this is where I'm bringing it to the podcast, is why. Because he was in Jordan, and he did a performance for the Jordanian royal family. Now, I personally am a fan of the Jordanian royal family. King Abdullah is a young dude. He's 40-ish, 43, 44, I don't know. But King Abdullah is just a cool dude. He is a very modern, hip dude for being a Middle Eastern king, at the least. He, for example, supports women's rights. He has chosen to have only one wife, who he is absolutely devoted to by all accounts, unlike his father who had four. And his wife, this is the awesome part, and this is how I came to take note of the Jordanian royal family in the first place. His wife, Queen Rania, is stunning. I have had her on my top 10 list for years, because Queen Rania is amazing. This woman is, she's, again, about his age. She's about my age, 41, 42, 43. And she is absolutely stunning. She is gorgeous and a teacher. Ooh, I love that. She's brilliant. She's very, very smart. And she is incredibly outspoken. And she fights for women's rights, the rights of the poor, oppressed, rights of children. She is just... She is a world leader in her own right. She's, well, as much as, the king's wife is going to be, but she is very involved and just an incredible woman, and not bad to look at either. So having this connection already to King Abdullah and Queen Rania, just because I'm aware of them and I followed them before, I was fascinated that Russell Peters then tells a story of hanging out with the king after his concert is over. All right, so it's him and Gabriel Iglesias, if you've seen Gabriel Iglesias on Comedy Central, and a couple other comics, all right? And they've all performed for the royal family in Jordan. Afterwards, the king invites them back to his place for supper. All right. So they head back to his place, and the king is now, it's like a little indoor barbecue thing. The king is cooking for them. So here's the king of Jordan cooking their meal for them as they're all having beers and drinks and they're chit-chatting, and it's just a party. And Russell says that somewhere around, 1:30 in the morning, 2 o'clock, the queen excuses herself to go to bed because she's tired. Now, at this point, Russell has been having a great time hanging out with the king and all the other comics and the other people that are there. He's been having a great time, but now he's a little uncomfortable because, the queen's excused herself and gone to bed. And when the hostess excuses herself, he's like, he was always taught, isn't that the time that you kind of, party must be over. That's our hint that we really got to leave. And so after that, he keeps making hints to the king that we're going to wrap it up. And ultimately, and the king's like, whoa, why do you have to go so soon? What's the matter? And he's like, we've got our plane taking off tomorrow, so we got to be at the airport early. And he's like, when's your plane take off? 10 o'clock. Oh, what time were you going to leave? Well, we're going to leave the hotel about 6. The king's like, no, 6. That's way too early. Way too early. Tell you what, you don't leave the hotel till 9. It'll be all right. I'll make some calls. Because, he's the king, and it's the Royal Jordanian Airlines, and therefore he's the royal part of that, right? Yeah, so here's Russell being very impressed that he's hanging out with the guy who can make those calls and do that sort of thing. All right. He finally does excuse himself. He winds up going. Next day, he leaves 9 o'clock. He gets out there. They've got plenty of time. He's waiting online. They're going through security. There, Gabriel Iglesias, the other comics, are right there with him. And just before they're about to get on, the plane's going to take off in, 20 minutes. The king said, go ahead. Don't worry. Be late. We'll get you through. Well, now, they've only got a few minutes left, and here come two armed guards. Are you Russell Peters? Yes. All right, we're going to need to see your papers. What? You're going to have to come with us, sir. And they drag him away. Well, not drag, but they escort him away. And they put him in this room, and they're grilling him. And they're asking him, what are you doing here? All right, why are you in the country? Uh-huh. Where were you last night? And now Russell at first thinks that, this is no big deal. Come on, I'm friends with the king. I'll get out of here in no time, right? I'll just name drop a little bit and they'll work out. But then these guys keep getting more and more serious, and he's realizing that he may well miss his plane. This is not a good scene for him. And after a little bit, once he finally starts sweating, Gabriel Iglesias comes barging into the room, talking on a cell phone. And he's like, hold on. Russell, it's for you. All right. So Gabe hands over the cell phone. Russell gets on the phone. And of course, it's King Abdullah. And King Abdullah says, yeah, that'll teach you to be the first one to leave one of my parties again. Ha ha! All right, so he got punked by the King of Jordan. That's not even the best part of the story for me. To me, all right, because one, the whole soul setup there is just amazing. But afterwards, he's talking to Iglesias, and Iglesias says, dude, no, we set all this up after you left. We went through all sorts of stuff. He said, this was the mildest of all the things he wanted to do. It's like, you're kidding. What did he want to do? Apparently, the king wanted to have a handgun and a gallon baggie full of flour planted in his bag for them to open up and discover right there in front of everybody. That's what they were going to do. I'm like, wow, that is so cool. Imagine hanging out with a guy, having a friend, an acquaintance that you hang out with, and he wants to play a joke on you, and his joke is he's going to put fake drugs and a handgun in your luggage when you go to the airport. And, he can get away with that, and everyone's going to be cool about it afterwards. Imagine being that guy. That's just too cool. So I appreciate Russell Peters and Mark Maron for presenting this story and allowing me to completely steal it and bring it over here and tell you guys about it. You guys, honestly, check out Russell Peters. And if I haven't emphasized enough, go over and listen to the WTF podcast. If you're interested in comedy at all, Mark Maron is just a phenomenal interviewer. A lot of fun to listen to. Highly recommend. But now, seriously, you're going to have to get the little ones out of the room. Make sure you're sitting down for this.
Nerd rage came flashing back, and I just looked at him and went, Rrr!
That's right. It's time for some nerd rage. Okay, here's my rage. Cracked.com. Did I already mention that I'm pretty sure they're stealing from me? Here's the deal. It's not just the elevator thing. All right, remember, I came out with my elevator button article and not... 2 days later, they come out with an article telling me that I'm a complete idiot. Okay. But then I go and place Neil Patrick Harris in my triumvirate because I have such respect for him. And I've mentioned many times my man love for Justin Timberlake. And I even mentioned that I started liking Justin Timberlake because I saw him on Saturday Night Live. So what do they do? All right. Well, they start up an article for five artists who suddenly stopped sucking out of nowhere. And who do they mention? Neil Patrick Harris? Justin Timberlake? And oh yeah, when did they start respecting Justin Timberlake? Oh, after his appearance on Saturday Night Live. Coincidence? Seriously? Okay. And then, even then, do you remember when I talked about the World Islands? The islands constructed off the coast of Dubai? Right. Then what do? Cracked comes out with mind-blowing ghost towns. What's in there? The World Islands. All right? They're listening to me. They're following me. They're undermining me. But that's not even really why I'm bringing this up today, because I could live with all that. That, really, the sincerest form of flattery and all that. I'm just thankful that they're listening, right? What's getting me is I'm finally realizing that Cracked articles are all the same, aren't they? Which is not true. Okay, there's actually, technically, I've actually worked this out. Once again, I've taken some notes. There's actually five categories of articles for me on Cracked.com. First of all, there's visual stuff. If it is videos, charts, the photo manipulation, lolcat, Icon has cheeseburger crap that they do, right, all of that stuff, while some of it may or may not be funny, if it's visual stuff, I don't even look at it. I can't, because like the videos and stuff, I don't have the bandwidth for that when I'm out. So I skip all those visuals, all right? Then their second category, drunken, incoherent rambling. Right, every once in a while, because most of their articles are based on a bunch of facts, a series of facts, 7 this, 6 that, 12 of whatever. But every now and then, they'll do something that's not based on news or facts or any of that. It's just some comedy story that they want to tell, some personal experience they want to relate, or some mushroom hallucination that they feel they need to get off their chest. And those tend to be not quite my speed. So those groups, the visual stuff and the drunken stuff, I ignore all of that, and that's about a third of the articles they put out. All right, of the remainder come in three types, and these are the ones that I read. All right, they have the Andy Rooney style articles, basically the what sucks about articles. Okay, what sucks about women's clothing? What sucks about being poor? What sucks about moving? And it's, you know, phrased as in 5 things about moving that you didn't realize were so terrible. All right, that kind of thing. And these articles, while they're a little negative, puts me off a little bit, usually pretty entertaining and usually pretty insightful. I don't mind those. And then they also have the ones that I refer to as the Ripley's Believe It or Not articles. Okay, these are the ones that give you a list of amazing facts, amazing things that you never realized were true, you never realized existed. And these I really enjoy, okay? 6, these are just recent ones even. All right, 6 absurd movie scenes that actually happened in real life. 5 mundane objects that saved important lives. Let's see, the 9 most badass last words ever uttered. Okay, see, these are all right up my alley. I like these. I like the amazing, that's incredible, Ripley's Believe It or Not kind of stuff. Good stuff. But then, the largest category of article that they write, by far, all right, I have the, you know, the visual stuff and the drunken stuff that I ignore. Of the ones that I read, fully 55%, and I know the exact number, it's actually 55.2%, because I tallied them up for God's sake, are in what I call the snarky category. These are the I'm too clever for the modern media articles, okay? These are the ones where they need to prove how smart they are. They need to sit down and watch movies with you and tell you how that could never happen, all right? That's what all these articles are, and it's over half of the ones that I read, all right? Fully over a third of their grand total articles. For example, a lot of times, it'll be movies or TV shows where they tell you how stupid it was that scene came up, all right? Or the most recent one, absurd situations that only happen in food commercials. Yeah, we understand food commercials are unrealistic. Yes, nobody has orgasms from eating a cheeseburger. Nobody shows up to a party bringing Taco Bell as an hors d'oeuvre. I get it, okay? They're TV commercials. No one expected realism out of them. But the Cracked writers come off as if they're saying something profound. They're saying something really clever and really meta because they noticed this and they brought it to our attention. And so for me, I'm getting really tired of these snarky articles because they're all the same. It's all this meta stuff that really, you know, we knew that. Again, another recent one. 5 badass movie heroes who were actually just really lucky. All right, and they have to explain to us how in Die Hard, when he shoves the chair with the C4 on it into the elevator shaft and he blows up the bad guys at the bottom, oh, God, it was just pure luck that it didn't wind up going off on another floor, that he didn't wind up blowing up a bunch of hostages, that he didn't... Okay, you know what? It's Die Hard. First off, Die Hard is the perfect goddamn movie, and you know it is. Why do you have to do this? All right? And this is honestly just so that as you enjoy these articles, these snarky articles, these too clever for words articles, the whole point of them is so that later, when you have a friend who says, oh yeah, Die Hard kicks ass, I love that, then you get to whip out your smart fact and go, oh, well, of course you realize. When you love Die Hard too, why would you go ruin it for somebody else when you love Die Hard? Die Hard's your favorite movie. You could watch that movie a million times, and yet now they've given you this ammunition, and you're willing to go ruin Die Hard not only for yourself but for somebody else just so that you can feel smart for a minute. Is that really what you want? Is that the person you want to be? Clearly, I don't. All right? So, my rage against Cracked, the reason I'm so upset with Cracked, is I read it every single day. I am so hooked on Cracked. I can't. It's like crack, but cracked. It is. I can't get away from it. All right? And so, again, you know, there's a good quarter of their articles that I actually read and I actually really enjoy and I think are positive. You know, hey, that's amazing. I never knew that. That's really good stuff. Now, again, factually, they're not a news site. All right? And so you got to kind of take it with a grain of salt and remember that some of their things, you know what, they're presenting it for effect. They're presenting a certain light. You might want to double check that if you actually want to use it in a research paper. Okay? Cracked is not a trusted resource, but most of their stuff is sourced. It's cited. You can follow up on it if you want. And it's pretty amazing stuff sometimes. But the snarky stuff, the stuff that sells, it's just killing me. And yet I read it every day. Every day has at least one of those articles along with something that might be interesting, might not. And I can't stop myself from reading them. And so where this goes is I'm upset with myself because I'm trying to master the self-control of weeding those out. Now, some of them are pretty fine lines. Some of them you can't tell before you get into them if it's going to be that's amazing or you ever notice how stupid that was? Okay, and you can't tell until you get in there. And so my trick is the ones that are obviously going to be snark, I'm trying to eliminate those before I even get into them. I'm not even going to bother to read them because, I mean, come on, seriously, I don't want to be that guy. And then here's the harder part is if I get into the article and realize that, oh, that's where it's going, you know what? Let's just back out now. Seriously. I mean, honestly, I know they've got funny captions to go with their photos, and those are really good no matter what the article, but do you want to be the guy that gets to point out that, well, you know, at the end of Top Gun, technically what they did was an act of war, and after this we'd probably be starting World War III with the Russians. Or, well, you know, Star Trek teleporters can't really work that way. Do you realize how much energy it would take to, oh, you know what? At the end of the first Star Wars trilogy, you realize that that explosion of the second Death Star would have wiped out all life on Endor. The Ewoks would all be dead at this point. No one ever talks about that, do they? All right. Don't be that guy. Don't do that. Yes, there's some humor there. Yes, there's some funny stuff. But do you really want to overanalyze every single bit of fiction that you've ever enjoyed in your life? Do you really want to do that? I don't want to think on those levels anymore. I'm tired of that. I like just enjoying stupid shit because it's stupid. You know what I mean? Enough rambling. That's not why I'm here today. Why I'm really here today? Lloyd's Garage. Oh, see, you've never heard of Lloyd's Garage, but I have, and they're awesome. All right? They are so much awesome. I heard about them yesterday. I have never heard of them before. Joel, okay, wait. I say you don't know about them, but I'm wrong. Joel, you're listening. You know about them. Everybody else, you've never heard of Lloyd's Garage. Joel comes to me yesterday and says, go to YouTube and look up Lloyd's Garage doing a cover of Katy Perry's California Girls. Find it. And he was very insistent. And so I did. And Lloyd's Garage, doing a cover of Katy Perry's California Girls, is unreal good. Holy crap. It's unrecognizable. All right. It doesn't sound anything like. I mean, you get the lyrics and you realize, oh, my God, that's the same tune. That's the same song. Is that really? Oh, my God, it's California Girls. But it's so good. And had I not known what link I clicked, had I not realized I was looking for a cover of Katy Perry, I would not even have recognized it until halfway through the song. And it wouldn't have mattered because the song was that good all by itself. It is. Now, a little high-mindedly, they call themselves the answer to autotune. They personally in their own blog, they say that they can't stand autotune, they can't stand the way music is overproduced, and what they have is a very raw and gritty sound with their natural instruments, natural voice, not overproduced, certainly not autotuned, and they feel that they have a superior sound, that they're bringing out some raw, natural, human quality of the music that is missing from a lot of modern music. And I can't argue with them. They are dead freaking on. All right. This is Lloyd's Garage is amazing. And it's not just this cover. I heard this cover. Go to YouTube and look it up yourself, because that's the only place I can find it right now. It's on YouTube. You will love this cover. But other than that, I go to Lloyd's Garage, and it turns out Lloyd's Garage is a couple of dudes, all right, with a very they're a rock duo with a very kind of bluesy sound. They remind me a lot of the Black Keys, which should be a compliment to them, because Black Keys are one of my favorite bands of all time. And they're just really good. And so, and I'm assuming, because they only have, you know, in the last year, they have like, oh, I don't know, four gigs that they've done, four concert dates that they happen to mention. Do you call it a concert? I have no idea. It doesn't make any difference. So clearly they're not doing a lot of touring. They're not doing a huge amount of performing, but they are in the studio a lot. They're releasing new songs. They're clearly working. I assume that they make a little money off of this, and they've got day jobs. These are a couple of guys who are just making good music because they love making good music. And if something good comes out of it, more power to them. All right, so I immediately went over to iTunes and plopped down my $10 to get their album, because I want to give these guys money. All right, and then, as it turns out, that I wanted to get to California Girls because the video on YouTube says, hey, go to our blog, go to our website, and you can download the song for free. So I immediately did that, and it turns out I can't. Oh, I was so disappointed. Turns out they've got a thing where they're releasing their songs for the new album. They're releasing them one at a time, and you go through this service where you can basically get whatever the most current song is, you can get that one. So I think there's a couple of them at least from this album that I've missed now, but I've got the newest one, and I'll be getting the future ones because I'm going to follow this up every day. I am thrilled to death. These guys are awesome. I have now, like I say, and this is just, I heard about them yesterday. I heard about them 24 hours ago, and I have already listened to the album probably two or three times through. I never do that with a new album. And I went to go pick some songs because I wanted to share them with you guys today. It took me forever. I could not decide which one, because I'd listen and I'd go, well, yeah, that's really good, but oh, wow, this one's really good. Oh, my God, all of them are good. The entire album, beginning to end, listen to these guys. So without further ado, You have to listen to Lloyd's Garage. And this is my first track I'm going to give you from them, entitled Return to Sender. Listen. Love that song, don't you? I knew it. I knew it. Seriously, go give these guys money. Go give them money. Get their music. You will enjoy it. Trust me. And to the guys in Lloyd's Garage, I'll speak directly to you guys. Thank you. Seriously. Really good stuff. We'll do some more from them in just a minute. But first, you know what time it is?
Badass Movie Quote of the Week.
This is not the oldest quote that we've had on Badass Movie Quote of the Week. I think that honor goes to Robert Mitchum in Night of the Hunter. But this one is from 1966. And I have a shameful admission to make. I have not seen this movie. This is the first time I've had a badass movie quote from a movie I have not seen. But I saw the quote in my list of quotes. I have hundreds of them. And I fell in love with it. I've loved this quote forever. And I've held off using it because I haven't seen the movie. And now I've decided, you know what? I don't care. It's just too good to not share. This is from Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? This is Richard Burton playing the part of George in the movie. And George says, quote, "You take the trouble to construct a civilization, to build a society based on the principles of principle. You make government and art and realize that they are, must be, both the same. You bring things to the saddest of all points, to the point where there is something to lose. Then, all at once, through all the music, through all the sensible sounds of men building, attempting, comes the dies irae. And what is it? What does the trumpet sound? Up yours." End quote. Again, I have no idea how he presents it to the film. I've only seen it in writing here. I'm sure Richard Burton is a slightly better actor than I am. But now I've decided, you know what, I really have to go make myself watch that movie because that quote is just maybe my favorite quote of all time. Second only to the Band of Brothers speech from Henry V, which will always be my favorite quote. But this one is really, really good. But enough movie talk. Honestly, you guys want more Lloyd's Garage? I don't blame you. This one, Suitcase. Great song. Did you hear that voice? Oh, I think that's Seth singing. I don't know. I don't remember who plays and who sings. I've only known him for 24 hours. Come on, people. I think that's Seth. That voice is unreal. I love that. So anyway, that was Suitcase by Lloyd's Garage. The first one was Return to Sender. Give them money. Go buy them. I almost debated playing the full songs. I always give you guys a minute, minute and a half. I give you the iTunes sampler, basically. And I didn't think these guys would mind playing the full song, but I got a format to keep. So we'll stick with that. If you guys want the whole thing, go buy it. You want it. But enough teasing. I've made you guys wait way too long for this. It's time for the Pod-O-Matic. Hot dog. This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble. He rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do those topics come from? Well, that's where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? Well, send your question or your topic to me by email, or really, you know the drill. Better yet, send it to me in private message on our forums. I'll add it to the Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. First roll, number 19. Thank you, R2. This one's from Billy Bob. Billy Bob says, "Dude, I'm bored. You ever worry about boring people with this show?" Oh, all the time. Oh, yeah, all the time. Look, do I think everyone wants to hear me go on for 8 minutes about cheese? Probably not, all right? Or, for that matter, do I think everyone likes the music I like? Well, okay, except for today. Yeah, you know what? Most of my songs, like when I played bluegrass last week, yeah, I know, 90% of you don't give a crap about bluegrass. You really, it's like the musical guest on Saturday Night Live. You're just waiting to get through it so you can move on to the good stuff. I get that. I don't care. All right, because that's the magic of this show. If you're bored with something, if you think one of my history pieces sucks, all right, if you don't give a crap about playing Pathfinder, it's only going to be 5 minutes, and then we'll move on to something you do like. And that's what I do here. It's attention deficit theater. It works for me, right? R2 says, 31. This one is from Sirius Paul. It says, have you ever played Car Wars? Have I ever played? Of course I've played Car Wars. I love Car Wars. You know what? I wish I had Car Wars right now. I love that game. It is the first tactical war game I've ever played, to tell you the truth. And that's really, it was a good introduction to it. It was magic. And it was overly complex, and I get that. And I don't care. The whole idea of the whole concept of moving on the roads, the turns, just the whole business of it. All right, the breaking down your turns into segments and moving second by second as you maneuver cars in and out, and of course, just constructing cars. How much fun was that? And I haven't played Car Wars in probably 20 years. Love that game, and I don't even own it anymore. I don't know what happened. It was great when we first bought it back in high school. It was like one of those $3 games, $4 games we bought in the little plastic, 5x7 box. A little plastic box with all the junk inside. May even have been one of the envelope games where you just got it in a plastic bag. I can't remember. And then later I got the Car Wars box set and all this other stuff. But Car Wars is great. I mean, it is just a ton of fun. And again, it's a tactical war game. It's very different from the other stuff I was used to playing. And I just loved the idea of it. It had a whole bunch of new concepts that had just never occurred to me. And then from there, my next step up in tactical wargaming was Starfleet Battles, in which I realized that, oh, I don't like real tactical wargames. Yeah, that's complex. I don't like stuff where I have to keep track of, you know, hundreds of units, dozens of shuttles and missiles and ships and second by second, moment by moment. Ugh, that was way too much. Starfleet Battles was way over the top for me, but Car Wars. Car Wars was awesome because it's just you. You know, you've got the one car, maybe two cars, depends on how you're playing, but in general, we would usually play, you know, two or three guys with one car each, maybe two cars each, and that was it. So that's the whole field, nice and simple, and yes, it's very excruciatingly minute in detail that every single moment and bit, it's like playing Shadowrun First Edition, honestly. But it was worth it, And yes, it was incredibly slow, and it took you 4 hours to play out 12 seconds of Road Warrior-style combat. Who cares? We had a great time doing it. Interesting story. When my brother Kyle was in junior high, he must have been in 7th grade, maybe? 6th grade? I don't remember. I think it was 7th. Anyway, they had to write an essay for English class, and it was describing some hobby of theirs or something that they had done, or who knows what the assignment was. My brother said, one of the other dudes in class came in, and his essay was a description of a Car Wars battle. No, really? Oh, yes. And, okay, you think Car Wars has a bunch of excruciating detail in the actual play of it? Okay, yeah, but you enjoy that because, you know, it's you're the one controlling it. And if you're into Car Wars, you know that's what you're in for. But this essay, and an essay that he read aloud to the rest of the class. In this essay, he transferred all that excruciating detail into prose for the audience. Holy crap. My brother said it was just painful. It was actually, honestly, paragraphs were broken down into, and then, on the next phase, I was able to turn 12 degrees so that I could fire my... Oh, my God, really? Really? Imagine being that guy. That's the saddest story I've ever heard. Number 87, also from Sirius Paul. Sirius Paul wants to know, what do barbarians order off the 99-cent menu at McDonald's? Well, okay, that's really easy. It depends on the McDonald's you're at, because what they really want is the spicy McChicken. But some McDonald's have spicy McChicken, and some of them have the not-quite-as-spicy McChicken. But for 99 cents, you can't go wrong. And, oh, by the way, they want the spicy McChicken with no shred, no lettuce on that thing, because what? What are they, wusses? They're barbarians. They eat meat. All right. Now, you would think that they'd go for the McDouble, because I think the McDouble is as much red meat as you can get for 99 cents at McDonald's. Probably true. But the spicy kick of the McChicken is way more their style, especially if you can get the Cajun McChicken, but I don't think you can get that one on the dollar menu. So as a barbarian, you go in and you order. Actually, here you go. As a barbarian, I'm going to go to McDonald's. I'm going to pull up to the drive-thru, and I'm going to say, all right, I'll take a McDouble. I'll take two spicy McChickens, no shred, $3 fries, and a small Diet Coke. Yeah, I think that should cover me. That's $7, and that gives me more than enough to stuff a barbarian full. I think we're ready to move on. Number 39. This one's from Brasky. Brasky says, how nerdy is your annual celebration of the birth of baby Jesus? Are there miniatures and graph paper waiting for people under the tree? Hell yeah! Of course there is! All right. This year, for example, I received a 20-sided die that lights up when you roll a 20, and only when you roll a 20. I got that one from McDiddle, so I've already mentioned that one. I got a set of foam dice, polyhedrals, everything but the die 6, and they're all about 3 inches across, soft foam, made expressly, I think, for throwing at your players when they piss you off during a game. I'm so happy to have them. Let's see, what else did I get? I got the Munchkin board game. I got, I got Go. I'm really excited about Go. I got a wooden Go board and a bunch of beads that go with it. And so I'm excited to learn how to play Go. All my gifts are nerd gifts. That's what I get. I love them. Love them. Last year was a card game theme, nothing but new card games for Christmas. It's always a nerd Christmas at the Jones household. That's just the way we do things. It's how we roll. R2 gives us a number 3. This one is from Stan. Stan says, if Marvel and DC universes were to merge so that each new hero was a combo of one Marvel and one DC hero, who would be the coolest and lamest merged heroes? Well, first off, this was already done in Amalgam Comics. And Amalgam was done, a lot of it for humor's sake. But Amalgam was a joint DC-Marvel venture, and all the Amalgam heroes were crossovers. And they wound up being, I don't remember all of them. In fact, I don't even remember most of them. I remember Spider-Boy, who was a cross between Spider-Man and Superboy. But that's not the question you asked. As much as I love Amalgam, and I do, and I would love to go back and buy both runs of it. They had two runs of it, and I think it was all first issues. You know, so every Amalgam comic that was released was amazing first issue. And they had two runs of Amalgam comics, I think one printed by DC and one printed by Marvel. And they're expensive to get now. You can get them compiled into a single graphic novel, but it's pricey. But I would love to get that. That's, you know what? I'm going to put that on my wish list because I would love to see those again. But if I were to do it and create Marvel and DC universes that merge heroes from each universe into new ones, who would be the coolest and who would be the lamest? This is Stan's question. Clearly, the coolest would be Night Arrow. This would be a cross between X-Men's Nightcrawler and DC's Green Arrow, all right? And he would be very similar in appearance to Nightcrawler, except wearing a darker version of Green Arrow's costume and carrying the bow. So now imagine teleporting, and when he appears, he pops off a couple arrows, and then boom, gone again before you can spot him, all right? That would be the cool one. And he would be kind of a swashbuckler, because both of them are. They have similar personalities in that respect. All right, and yet both of them also have this dark, angsty side underneath the swashbuckling, the witty quips and all that stuff. They also have that darker side to them. And I think Night Arrow would be a really deep sort of character. I think he would be fascinating, and I would enjoy watching him. So that's my first pick for coolest. Now, who would be the lamest? This one's going to be harder. I'm racking my brain for the lamest, or at least in my opinion, most hated characters from both lines of comics. And I'm going to have to go with my cross between Gambit and Aquaman. And I'm going to call him the Card Shark, if I can be that clever. And his primary power will be that he can charge ordinary objects with kinetic energy and send them off as deadly projectiles, but only underwater. Yeah, that would be pretty much the lamest as far as... Oh, and he would, of course, speak with that stupid Cajun accent, because that's how everyone speaks in Atlantis. Yeah, I think that covers it. Number 67. Yet another one from Sirius Paul. What one paladin power would you like to have? That one's easy. I want the paladin's mount, because I'm going to use it to get me that griffin. Number 38. This one is Jeff Hawes. Jeff Hawes says, oh, it's another Saturday Night Live question. Your favorite Saturday Night Live short, the more recent digital shorts or the old TV Funhouse animated ones, what do you like best? Okay, I have a couple answers to this because I love the SNL shorts of all sorts, but I love the Lonely Island stuff that they've done recently, Andy Samberg and all that. Started off with Samberg and Justin Timberlake, oh, dreamy, singing Dick in a Box, clever, funny, hysterical song, love that song. And then they've done some other ones. The most recent one that I've picked up has been when they had Michael Bolton on and they did the Captain Jack Sparrow song, funny stuff. The Chronicles of Narnia song, love those. Hysterical stuff. But probably funnier than that even, the Ambiguously Gay Duo from the old TV Funhouse. I know it's a stupid joke. I know it's one joke over and over and over, and I don't care. The Ambiguously Gay Duo is funny every stinking time. I really need to go out somewhere and find a little compilation so I can just watch all of their episodes. And I mean, there was what, maybe, I don't know, 4 of them, 8 of them? I have no idea how many. I should watch them all back to back, get it out of my system, because I love those things. I haven't seen them in years. Thanks. Number 40, again from Brasky. Brasky says, are zombies becoming overexposed? I don't want to sound all, I loved REM when they were an unknown Athens band and now they're just corporate sellouts, blah, blah, blah. But it seems like zombies were cooler back when you had to be a geek to like them. Now zombies are everywhere, even with their own hip Reno 911 type show on MTV. Too much, right? Yeah, sorta. Look, I know zombies are overdone, but just like anything, it doesn't make any difference. There's still gems in there. Just being overdone just means there's a lot of it out there, and that means that a lot of what you're going to see is going to be crap. Well, you know what? Most zombie stuff has always been crap, but there's still good stuff in there, and there's still stuff worth seeing. All right? And I don't know when any particular thing came out, but, you know, World War Z? Love World War Z. Zombieland, greatest zombie movie ever done. I love zombie stuff. And, okay, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, eh, lame, stupid, kind of gimmicky. Didn't enjoy that one much. And yeah, now that zombies are making appearances in TV ads for decongestant, yeah, maybe not as cool as they once were. I get that. But doesn't mean we have to move on. I can still enjoy my zombies. But I totally get you. I feel it. The experience feels cheapened, doesn't it? I mean, honestly, when my mom can get in on a good zombie joke, yeah, it's not quite the same as when it was secret knowledge between us. I get what you're saying. But, no, I don't mind. I still enjoy a good zombie story. I still enjoy a good zombie game. I enjoy Zombie Munchkin. I enjoy zombie cinema. I can still do all of that because, you know what, just because there's garbage out there doesn't mean it has to ruin my fun, right? Boom! All the way down to number one. Number one from Sirius Paul again. Did you ever play any Robotech? Nope, never played Robotech. How about number 75 from Sirius Paul? Why is it my left shoelace always comes untied, but my right shoelace is always fine? It's because you're wearing two different shoes, dude. Seriously. Honestly, replace the left one and get one with some decent laces on it. I can't believe you didn't even see that. And that was the very end of our Podomatics. You know what it's time for? Oh, no, no. Surprise. One more. Music from Lloyd's Garage. I couldn't resist. I got to give you one more. This one's called No Victim. Listen. Swear, I just couldn't help myself. It's so good. This podcast is copyright 2012 by Nerd Pride Radio. The featured music this week was Lloyd's Garage with Return to Sender, Suitcase, and No Victim. The opening and closing theme is from the Beastie Boys' Sabotage as performed by the Penelopes. And the only musical bumper clip this week was taken from Weezer's In the Garage. All of my bumper clips always are available on iTunes. Check them out. Buy them. I wouldn't put them in my show if I didn't love them. If you feel like doing something nice for this podcast, head on over to iTunes, write us a nice review. Or if you want to contact me, you can always email me at mike@nerdprideradio.com or check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But you know that that's all pointless because the only real way to contact me is to come over to my forums. Sign up at nerdprideradio.com/forums. Sign up for an account. Send me a message. We'll hang out. We will have fun. Following is a transcript of my lecture entitled Anti-Captain, originally given at the Tercentennial Trek World Trek Con on September 15, 2266. It's included here as part of Calgary University Network's North American Media History series of lectures. Often referred to as the Anti-Captain, Captain Samuel W. LaForge was an unadulterated bastard. This is in no way controversial, even among his most devoted fans, and there's a lot of you out there. There may be some debate over what adjective to put with it, but on the word bastard, there's pretty much universal agreement. The man was a prick. Yet, look around you right now. Check out this audience. Look at all the costumes. How many LaForges do we have here in the audience right now? Somehow, this man who was so hard, so indifferent, so seemingly unfeeling, has become really one of the most beloved and respected of all of the Star Trek characters, second only, maybe, to Captain Kirk himself. The far more interesting question is why? Why was this man, this hard, indifferent, cold, cruel sometimes man, why was he so respected? And more importantly, why was he, then and now, so beloved by fans? Was there really a plan in all this? Or was this popularity of the man LaForge just a fluke of happenstance? Personally, I maintain that Sam LaForge was exactly the man he needed to be, and the Juarez sisters knew exactly what they were doing when they created him. But first, some introductions. If we're going to ask so many questions, we should start with, who am I? Why have I been allowed to stand at the main podium in the center of Madison Hall in the glorious Las Vegas Odyssey Palace at the largest Star Trek convention ever in the world? What makes me think I'm qualified to pass judgment on the man who commanded the flagship of humanity for five of the most troubled years in the Trek timeline? Well, my name is Ronnie Ben Levy. I'm a literary historian and a Star Trek scholar, and, far more importantly, I was only 3.5 minutes away from being Captain James Tiberius Kirk. Yeah, see, that's the line I use when I want to see otherwise respected Star Trek scholars break down into quibbling over minutia. But it's actually true. I was actually born at Riverside Methodist Hospital in Riverside, Iowa, in the North American Federated States. This is Kirk's birthplace. More than that, my birthdate is March 22nd, 2233. Time, 3:18 p.m., 3 minutes short of the time listed on Kirk's birth certificate in the switched episode of Star Trek Parallels. I was beat out, unfortunately, by one Jerry James Lohman, who was born at 0 hour. He was born exactly at 3:21. And my father, if you ask him, will swear to this day that the doctor fudged the time for him. But I comfort myself knowing that I'm older than him, I am his senior, his superior, and therefore I'm sure that allows me to boss him around. Now, Curlin Roski was the head writer of the series Star Trek Parallels, and she was also at the time co-executor of the Star Trek franchise. As she claims that the James Kirk birth certificate in that episode was her idea. Speaking in an interview years later, she said, and I quote, "I've always viewed Trek with an almost religious reference, especially when I was younger. Seeing its message ignored or obscured by trivia battles wasn't just pointless. To me, it was tantamount to sacrilege. So, when I finally got a chance to write for Trek, when I finally became co-executor and had a chance to guide the destiny of the Star Trek properties, well, here was my chance to put some of these things to rest once and for all." End quote. Then, in the interview, she laughs before she laments to the interviewer, quote, "I truly thought that by putting a birth certificate in front of the camera, it would put an end to this whole debate over when James Kirk was born." End quote. She concludes with the statement, "I was so very, very wrong." And so today, nearly a century and a half after she made those statements, there are still learned professors of literature and media who can write entire volumes on whether or not that birth certificate can even be considered authentic. She was, indeed, very, very wrong. But this is part and parcel of the whole Star Trek experience. After more than 24 serialized incarnations of the Trek universe, almost 200 licensed standalone features, thousands of novels, inter-narratives, graphic novels, merchandise, 2 theme parks, 4 sanctioned Psi worlds, Star Trek is arguably, really, the most pervasive, persistent, influential construct of media and literature in the history of mankind. And honestly, all of that, that only includes the official canon material. That only includes the licensed, sanctioned material from the Star Trek estates themselves. Material from fans, from amateurs, from opportunists and PD revisionists, not to mention people like me, scholars, biographers, historians. All of it increases this volume of Trek lore tenfold. There is so much out there, it couldn't be consumed in a lifetime. All right, unlike Miss Roski, though, I say, embrace this conflict. It doesn't matter how many squabbles you manage to settle, there's always going to be more. So, why would we waste time fighting it? Instead, we need to focus on the larger and more meaningful aspects of the entire Star Trek experience. I mean, in as much, of course, as any work of popular fiction can be considered meaningful in a larger sense. But foremost in my mind, why do people still, 300 years later, love Star Trek as much as they do? I mean, today, it's been over 33 years since that convention that marked my own birth, and this Trek community that I have willingly and lovingly made myself a part of finds itself here, in this place, in a celebration of Star Trek that puts the 100,000 people at my own birth to shame. All right? As one of the people on the margins of Trek fame, and I make no bones about that, I have no illusions of my place in the grand scheme of things, I'm just fortunate by an accident of birth that I get to hang on and be a part of this community. I'm fortunate enough to be a speaker here tonight. I'm fortunate enough to have my accommodations provided by the convention organizers. And so getting here and getting settled wasn't even a worry for me. But for the rest of you? My God, every hotel within a Norbathian League of Las Vegas has been booked solid for over 2 years now. I mean, picture it. Over 1 million people are expected to flow through this 3-week tercentennial Trek World Trek Con before this thing is over. We're celebrating not just the 300th anniversary of the original Star Trek series, but also Kirk and the Enterprise's original 5-year mission, which, if my calculations are correct, would be in its second year right now. In fact, if everything in Star Trek had come to pass as the shows told us, right now the Enterprise would be somewhere near Talos IV, and Kirk, I believe, would be planning to try Commander Spock for treason right now. Finally, the real world has caught up to the Trek timeline, even if I don't have my own transporter or phaser yet. After 300 years, Star Trek continues to speak to some essential part of the human psyche. It's been nearly 3 centuries since its inception, and yet, today, beam me up, Scotty, he's dead, Jim. These are phrases that are familiar even to non-Star Trek fans, as familiar to them as to be or not to be, or wherefore art thou, Romeo. I mean, in April of last year, literary fans from all over the world celebrated Shakespeare's 700th birthday. That was big time. Huge Ren fairs and sonnet contests, brilliant readings and performances from some of the biggest names in showbiz today, and none of that can hold a candle to the event I am witnessing right now. That marks the end of part one of Anti-Captain.